Welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Caprellian. I'm joined by my co-host and sister, Alexandra Caprellian. We interview service members that transition to civilian careers and DOD and civilian HR professionals that help with that career transition so that we can provide you and myself with lessons learned to help us transition with confidence. On this next episode, we have Patrick Holcomb, a retired Marine Corps officer, a Mustang, who had a logistics MOS, and then he made a big pivot. He ended up becoming an author of a novel. And then shortly after he finished writing, he got a job as a program manager for a tech company. So we almost got two different interviews simultaneously packed into this one interview. Stay tuned because there's a lot of information, but he gets short, sweet, and to the point throughout the entire. Patrick Holcomb, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Hey, I'm excited about this conversation. Having another fellow Marine officer and engineer on the line, but also to talk about kind of how you did a little bit of a non-traditional transition, being an author with a book that's pending release, and also becoming a program manager, which is something I'm personally interested in. But before we get to that, I'd like you to introduce yourself to our audience. Just tell us a little bit about where you grew up, how you joined the military, and just an overview of your career.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, I'm so happy to be here today. You know, once you go through the military transition, I think it's something that you really like to talk about, if only to help other people do it a little more smoothly than you did it yourself. So thank you for the opportunity. So the first part of the question, I think, is where I am from originally, and that's Northern California. So I was born in Concord. I moved around quite a bit growing up. So my dad was in the insurance business. He was with AAA. And every time he got a promotion and took over a new office, the family picked up and moved. So a little bit difficult in some ways, but also prepared me really well for the years ahead, conditioned me to be able to start in a new place and build a new life and meet and make friends. So I think it was good in that regard. We moved to a town called Santa Rosa, which is about an hour north of San Francisco, when I was in the fourth grade, and we stayed there through high school. It was a goal of my parents to let us settle in one place and be able to go through the last years of school. So my sister, who is 4 years older, went through high school there. So did I. So the military part, I would say that my road to the Marine Corps started at Wendy's. It was my first job. I was 15 years old. I was working the drive-through. This guy in a white sedan pulls through. He's in a uniform. I don't know what that uniform means, but he hands me a business card, starts chatting me up. And the dude kept coming back and back and back. You know, I saw him plenty more times. Didn't really progress anymore, but I saved the business card. And then eventually, a few years later, I picked up the phone. That guy was long gone. I talked to somebody else. History from there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and then just take us briefly, like, I know you're a Mustang, so talk about just kind of like where you went in your time in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I graduated high school in June 2001, right? So you might start doing the math there. Went to boot camp in July. So something pretty big happened a couple months later, 9/11. Kind of changed the world. It was definitely an interesting moment for those who were in boot camp because we weren't able to access all the information. We didn't really understand the scope of what was going on. We just knew that it was big and potentially scary. But after I graduated boot camp, I went to my MOS school. I was doing admin, which wasn't what I really wanted. Wasn't something that I necessarily enjoyed, but I realized down the road that it was probably a good thing. Taught me a lot. But a couple years later, found myself on USS Boxer heading towards the Gulf. And then the invasion kicked off. And there I was in Iraq, not doing admin. And after that deployment, I had some great leadership around me. And they said, hey, you know, we see some potential here. And we'd like to talk to you about how to maximize it. And their suggestion was an officer program. So I took a look. I said, yeah, this looks like something I could do. I applied. I was accepted. ended up going to college at Auburn. And I don't think that's necessarily the dream of every California kid is to end up going to college in Alabama.
It's the Harvard of the South, though. It's the Harvard
of the South.
That's
what they say. That's what they say. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for that plug. So got my commission coming out of Auburn, went to TBS, and I was designated as a logistics officer, which turned out to be a fantastic fit. The first place that I went was Hawaii and had a really great tour there at 1st Battalion, 12th Marines, doing artillery stuff, doing a lot of field exercises, one Afghanistan deployment during those years. After 112, it was off to Okinawa, and I went to the Air Wing. And it was a totally different experience, mm-hmm. but also very cool, very rewarding. Did a lot of traveling, both personally and professionally during those years, tons of exercises. One of the things that I did when I was there was this thing called MPF, Maritime Prepositioning Force. So we did a large exercise where you're taking these ships that are packed full of military equipment, offloading them, and then using that equipment for an exercise. Learned a lot there, learned just enough to impress the monitor and talk my way into a job at Coronado teaching MPF staff planning. So I did that for a couple of years, got selected to major. And at that point, it was up the road to Miramar. And the monitor said, yeah, you know, you'd be really good fit for this new unit that we're standing up called MWSG 37. Not really new because it had been deactivated about 6 years before that. But I got the opportunity to join a pretty small team, stand up a brand new organization, had a lot of fun doing it. And then in typical Marine Corps fashion, the phone rang, proverbial, of course, about 18 months later. And they said, yeah, you're done here. So we deactivated the unit that we had just taken all that time and energy to stand up. And I moved up to the MA headquarters for my last year. And really, I did a lot of the same stuff that I had been doing at the MWSG. It was ops related and also doing a lot of planning for large scale exercises. And I did that for a year. And after that, it was time to hang it up. And that was it for me. 20 years in the blink of an eye.
Wow. That's great. I called you an engineer officer. I must have missed it in my notes being the logistics officer. But what's really interesting is that despite the fact that we have two different MOSs, I'm a 1302 engineer and you're 0402 logistician. We have a lot of the similar experiences. You were at Group 37 mm-hmm. when I was at Group 27 doing airfield services management and construction management at the ops level. And then I had my dose of MPF exposure on an exercise in Norway when I was in Rival Assembly Operations Group XO.
Oh, very cool.
But it was awesome. It was a great deep dive into a portion of logistics that I wasn't familiar with, and it was a trial by fire in many ways. But great. Well, hey, thanks for giving us the overview. But I kind of want to get into the skinny here. So, tell us a little bit about what your game plan was upon your transition.
Okay, so that's a bit of a complex question. I decided at about year 13 that I was going to retire at 20. It made sense for all the right reasons. I liked what my parents did with me, giving me that chance to go to school in one place and make that core friend group that I've retained throughout the years. So we said, okay, you know, we're going to try to line this up to end up in San Diego and finish there. This is me and my now ex-wife. And I started thinking about my transition at that time. So I had a good five-year plan. I'm going to go out and get an MBA. I'm going to become a PMP, a certified project manager. I'm going to start networking. And I did all those things, you know, because I really wanted to be ready. But none of that really spoke to my passion. My passion was running and climbing mountains. And I had a dream, a big one. I wanted to run a marathon on every continent, and I wanted to climb the tallest mountain on every continent. I called it the 7 and 7. And I chipped away at that for a long time, but you only get so much time off in the Marine Corps, and there were some mountains that I just couldn't get after. So my plan upon retirement was to finish those big mountains, including Everest, and be able to really cap off this decade-long adventure. And then life intervened. The body just couldn't take it anymore. I had a shoulder surgery. And then I was due for a hip surgery. And this is right about the time that I was retiring. And I decided to wave off. So I planned the hip surgery and it was going to be just after my retirement. But I realized, yeah, this is not the direction I'm going to be able to go in right now. But it's still a fantastic opportunity. I had this time to go and do something new and exciting and challenging, and I didn't really want to jump back into the workforce yet. So I had an idea, which was writing a novel, and I said, okay, if I'm ever going to do this, now is the time. So initially, I pursued that.
Okay.
You know, just a small little thing of writing a novel.
Yeah, just that little thing. Just that, yeah. That huge life-defining risk. Yeah, just that.
Yeah. Okay, so you knew that you had made the decision that you were going to write a novel, but was there kind of like could you describe the transition point from the time that you had your retirement ceremony to the time that you actually started putting pen to paper? What was that transition like for you?
So it was really a time of educating myself.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about writing fiction, and that's not a good place to be if you want to start writing fiction. So, you know, I had my experience as a project and program manager. I knew how to structure big projects. I knew how to learn things, but I picked up a book called like Writing Your Novel from Start to Finish. And I read it cover to cover. And then I read it again. I highlighted, I took notes, I researched topics that I didn't quite understand. And through that process, I learned a ton, but I also started to put together a plan. You know, this idea that I had that really had a beginning and an ending, but no middle, it started to take shape. And it was probably about 4 months before I was ready to sit down and start writing. And that's where it really got hard.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that some of the discipline that we developed while we were in the Marine Corps helps, but I've also heard from just listening to other podcasts, writers trying to overcome that initial writer's block. I mean, is that something that you experienced when you were trying to frame out what it is that you wanted to write about?
Yeah, totally. I treated it like a day job. So I would write for a couple hours in the morning, then go get a workout in, come back, do some more. But sometimes it was hard because the ideas just don't come. And without an idea, there's very little to write. You can go back and you can refine stuff you've already done. But as far as staying on track, what really helped me was having a writing coach. So first of all, she pointed out something very bad that I was doing early on, which was inconsistent point of view. And once I had that down, things really started to flow from there. But without her, I don't know if I would have noticed it as quickly. But we had weekly tag ups. So every week I was responsible for producing, and I would make and send her fresh material, and we would discuss it. She'd give me some feedback, and that helped me stay on track. So she was a fantastic coach. Without Nicole, I don't know if I would have gotten through that first draft, because most writers don't. They say 90% don't even finish a first draft.
Let me ask you another question, slightly different. Talking about creativity.
Yes.
A lot of times, like particularly when we get to that level, we're in our military careers. It's a lot of, we know the inputs that are coming in. We know the work we need to do. We know the outputs. A lot of what we do is somewhat predictable. But then you make this big transition where you're going to be writing a novel. And you need to tap into some well of like creativity, or get your mind or your mind and yourself in a place where you can have those creative thoughts. Could you tell me a little bit about how maybe you accomplished that?
You know, that's a very insightful question that you asked. It's a totally different skill set and mindset. And for me, it was a tough transition because I really hadn't been using that part of my mind or personality as much as I could have, or maybe should have. So it was difficult. I think what was also difficult was putting down the analytical part of my mind and tapping more into the emotions, right? When you're writing fiction, you need to explore a lot of complex emotions. And then you need to try to put yourself into the characters that you're creating and think about how they would feel in that moment. And then express it in a way that is going to touch a reader. For me, that was a challenge, and it took some time for me to really be able to tap into that. And then honestly, once I was done writing the book, it took me some time to transition back too, because what the world was looking for as far as hiring me was not that writer who was in touch with his emotions, but that analytical guy, that program and project manager, the one who was able to shape a plan and then go execute it. So there was a lot of transitioning that was happening during that year and a half period.
That's interesting. And that's something like, it's almost contrary to the culture that I'm in. Highly analytical. I mean, it's not that we disregard the emotional estate. I mean, we talk about doctrinally the mental, moral, physical aspects of war fighting, but actually leveraging your emotional state to be able to produce something that's truly unique, truly creative. That's a very interesting place that I don't think I've ever been required to be in. And I'm sure the coach helped get to that point. Did she?
She did. She did to some extent. I think there were times where she would call me out. She would say, "You're holding back," or "You're not going deep enough." And if she was saying it, she was probably right. And it would give me time for pause, and I would say, "Okay, you know, let me go back and revisit that." I don't think that I really started getting that depth until the second, third, and fourth drafts. You know, the first draft is all about getting it out there. You know, in the second draft, I really started refining the characters. I think the third draft is where I really focused on going deeper and really getting into the depth of emotion that I needed to. So it was a process. It took time.
That's great. So I need you to help me with a little bit of the chronology.
Yes.
You have the transition out of the military and your retirement, writing a novel. And then I know you used Hiring Our Heroes. It's a great program. I actually don't know a lot about it. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience?
Totally. So I was familiar with the fellowships that Hiring Our Heroes does, but I was familiar with what they do for active duty, where you're given a few months at the end of your time in service and you get to go join a company and learn new things. They get a look at you, you get a look at them. Maybe it's a good fit, maybe it's not, but you're getting this professional experience that you don't already have. I saw a lot of folks do it. It wasn't right for me at the end of my time on active duty because I had other plans, but I saw it and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I was upset that it wasn't an opportunity afforded to those who were already out. But then I learned that they had a spouse fellowship program. And because of my 13 years as a dual active duty spouse, I qualified for it. So I got some information. I met a woman named Tracy Steele, who is actually the spouse of Colonel David Steele, recently retired, who I worked with at the MAW. So I applied for the program. I was accepted. And then at that point, you're putting your resume out there. And they have a group of companies that they work with, and it's basically casting a line in the water and hoping that a company will bite. And near the end of my window of availability, Viasat did bite. We had a couple good interviews, and they said, yeah, we want to take you on board.
That's great. What did you learn at Viasat in this program?
So for those not familiar with Viasat, it's a satellite communications company that does a lot with the military, also does a lot commercially. So what they brought me on board to do was to help stand up this new program where they were using satellite communications to help railroads monitor train communications, right? It was a brand new area for them, and they wanted me to bring in that PM experience to help them stand it up. Everything went really well. I learned a ton about satellite communications and different applications. But unfortunately, at the end, the deal didn't progress as quickly as it was supposed to. They signed an agreement, but there was no money behind it. And with no money, there was no job for me. So even though I really enjoyed my time at Viasat and learned a lot, I ended up walking away. And that was kind of tough because it feels like starting over, especially after 12 weeks where, you know, even though you know there's no guarantees, you're already starting to envision this future with this company. I really enjoyed the people that I was working with. It felt like a good challenge. But ultimately, I had to walk away.
That's interesting. We had a conversation with somebody previously that talked about kind of the vibe of being part of a startup. Granted, Viasat's probably a much larger company, but it sounds like that you're being part of a new project. You've got a core team that's got a different energy to it. What was that energy like?
Oh, it was very much a startup. So the VP who I worked for, a guy named Andy Kessler, retired Navy, he made sure that everybody understood that they were to maintain that startup mentality, right? He wanted people to be aggressive, to be innovative, to be looking for new ideas across the landscape. And I think his energy was really contagious. You know, he was the right man to be leading that effort. I learned a lot from him personally during my time there. I would have loved to have continued working for him. But yeah, that energy was really cool. And I think that's part of the reason that when I moved on from Viasat, I started thinking carefully about, well, okay, you know, when I start targeting companies, do I want huge companies that have been around for a long time and are super mature, or do I want something smaller where I get the opportunity to jump in and build something? So that was something that stuck with me as I was beginning that process.
Okay. Were you writing your novel while you were while you were with Viasat in that program?
No. So at that point, the pen was down, and I'd already started shopping it to agents, and I was working through that process of finding a publisher. So I was doing things in the meantime, but the writing was done at that point, which gave me the opportunity to start that mental transition that I was talking about before. And to be honest, I was a little nervous about it. You know, you start to question yourself. Do I still have that in me? It's been so long, because things don't just pop into your mind as quickly as they used to. So one of the other benefits of doing that fellowship was that it gave me an opportunity to settle back in mentally and to refresh my thinking skills, my problem-solving skills, to relearn the language so that I didn't have to search for the words. They were there on the tip of my tongue. And I think by the end of the 12 weeks, I was pretty much back in that mindset that I needed to be in, but it took a little time. You know, it was a transition.
It's a secondary transition.
Totally. And that, yeah.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know a lot of times in this different SkillBridge programs, whether it's through Hiring Our Heroes or another organization, there's a heavy emphasis on conversion rate. And what they're talking about is the conversion of an applicant that gets accepted to spend time at a company to converting into an actual job offer from that company. And you know, I don't think you're the first person that's mentioned it, although it didn't necessarily convert to a long-term employment with that company. It did help acclimatize you to the language. And then, as you mentioned, which I don't think anybody's really mentioned before, kind of repriming your mind for that type of work. So, and how did that help you? I mean, I think if you could talk a little bit about how that helped you transition into your current role and who you're working for now.
So I was afforded networking opportunities through Viasat. And actually, when you're part of the fellowship, networking is a big deal. They encourage you to do it. So even though you're with a company, you're encouraged to network within that company and also outside of that company. So it definitely put me into that networking mode. It also helped me work on my pitch. You know, a lot of times you don't have more than a few seconds to introduce yourself and convince someone that you could be a good fit. And there's still an interview process that goes after that, but you have to be sharp. You have to be on your game and you have to be able to sell. I didn't necessarily understand that in the beginning, or maybe more so, I didn't understand how best to market myself. I gained a much better appreciation through the 12-week fellowship for how to position myself, how to market myself. And I think coming out of it, I was just really much better set to go in and speak confidently and show people that I was a good fit.
Okay, great. And then where are you working now?
So now I'm working for a small company called Freedom Flightworks. And we are barely more than a startup. What we do is we specialize really in building what I would call innovative flying machines that have military capabilities. We do small business innovation research contracts, mostly, that are, they're basically the government saying, we have a gap. We have a problem that we want to solve. So they put out the solicitation and they don't tell you how to solve the problem, but they say, this is what we want to accomplish. And then they let small businesses come up with ideas and you write a proposal. And if you're selected, then you're given a certain amount of money over a certain period of performance and you get to go build something cool. So that's what we do. And so far it's been a lot of fun.
That's great. And you're a program manager for that. So what kind of aspects of the business are you handling as a PM within a very small company?
So a small company like this is a lot like being in the Marine Corps, where you wear a lot of different hats. My primary job is program management. So we have a number of different contracts that are active right now, where we are developing technology. And I'm looking at things like cost, performance, scope, schedule. And staying on top of that and making sure that we are executing and executing efficiently. I also do business development. So part of that is looking at these solicitations and thinking, okay, well, what is a good fit? Writing the proposals, going to different trade shows and showcasing our technology to try to get the military excited about it and get more people talking about it so that hopefully we could clear what's called the Valley of Death, which often happens. You develop a prototype, but then to become a program of record, there's years and a lot of work and maybe some good luck that's required to get there. It's a situation where I wear a lot of hats and we have a lot of balls in the air at any given time, but I work with a close-knit team that is not only very talented, but very committed. And, you know, it kind of feels like a home, which is something that I was looking for and I think I found.
Valley of Death.
Valley of Death. You know, it's grim. It's super grim, but it's true.
Yeah. Well,
Google it after this. You'll see.
Okay. I'm sure I will. No, that's great. So thanks for the overview of kind of what you're doing. I noticed you used some terminology that's that PMI, Project Management Institute. Mm-hmm. I recently took a class for their PMP, and it was... And now I'm kind of remembering some of the lexicon that you're using as far as cost scheduling and then measuring progress. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about a little bit more coaching the military transition. So you have experience getting out of the military, writing a book, and then also as a program manager. Mm-hmm. How did your career, what aspects of your career helped you with being the writer and also being the program manager?
Okay. Let me start with the writing first. Mm. So, you know, if you look at it initially, you're like, oh, wow, this guy's got a lot to learn. And I did. I had a lot to learn about writing fiction. I came in with skills that were not developed and there was some growth required. I felt fortunate, though, that I had this career as a military officer where I had so many other skills that I was able to bring forward. You know, when I was an instructor at EWTGPAC in Coronado teaching staff planning, I rewrote the entire curriculum. That was a big project and it required a lot of writing because along with all the PowerPoints that go into it, you also have a student handbook and I wrote that cover to cover. So it wasn't like I hadn't done writing projects before. I just hadn't done fiction. But I'd done a ton of project management. I knew how to eat the elephant one bite at a time. And I think for a lot of writers, that's the hardest part, is being able to take an idea, make it into a plan, and then have the perseverance to execute it. I think that's where a lot of people get stuck. So that helped me on the writing side. As far as the PM job with Freedom Flight Works, I think that my military experience, my Marine Corps experience really transitioned well. I'm doing so many of the same things now that I used to do when I was an officer in the Marine Corps. It set me up for success. There are some aspects that I'm not doing. I don't have the day-to-day leadership responsibilities, which actually allows me to focus on the PM side a little bit more. But all of the skills that I needed were really, really there from my experience in the Marine Corps.
Mm. And if somebody wanted to either go do the writing or try and apply for a position as either a program manager or a project manager, what are the things that you would recommend to transitioning service members? How would they spend like their last year on active duty preparing to be competitive for those roles or preparing to author their first book?
You know, as far as the book goes, I think every author's journey is a little bit different, and it varies greatly whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction. But the best thing that you can do is start looking for mentors. Look for people who have written books, search them out, talk to them. I have found a ton of mentors along the way, and without their wisdom, experience, and guidance, I wouldn't have gotten to the point where I am now, which is 2 months away from this book hitting the street and being out there in the world. The professional side, the PM side, you have to understand what industry you want to be in and what that industry is looking for. So for me, I looked at a lot of different industries. And as a PM, especially with an MBA and a PMP, you're competitive in most fields, but a lot of them are looking for industry specific experience right up front. So it's a hurdle that you have to clear. Now, if you want to go to a company that does military contracting, then you have a bit of a leg up because they tend to recognize your experience and understand it a little bit more, and they want to hire former military. So there are a lot of different contractors that you could look at. There's a lot of them here in San Diego. And I did, to be honest with you, I was in the late stage interview with three different companies besides Freedom Flight Works. And they kind of jumped in at the last minute, but they had everything that I was looking for. So I ended up going in that direction.
Okay. Thanks for that advice. Sis, do you have any questions?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really interesting because you mentioned that you wear a bunch of different hats when you're at a startup, but it's really great that where you're at now, it seems like you get to continue that creative side as well. When you don't have an action plan and they just say, this is the result that we want and you have to figure it out, you have to be creative in it. And I think
that's true.
It's it sounds like you found a good medium there. So good on you. But when you decided to write a novel, was there a point at which you experienced something or you felt something that made you believe, okay, I did make the right decision? Because that is a huge leap of writing a novel. And was there a moment where you said, okay, I know I made the right decision in doing this?
There are so many different peaks and valleys in the process of writing a novel. You will feel like you're on top of the world one moment and you will be down in the dumps the next. When I finished the first draft, it felt meaningful and real and rewarding. And for a moment, I was on top of the world. And then I realized, oh man, I still have a long way to go. And it got me down a little bit. The process of trying to find an agent to get a publisher is so demoralizing. It was a really, really tough thing that I went through trying to take this book that I was really proud of, that I believed in, and get other people to believe in it enough that they would publish it. But eventually it happened. And that was another moment where I just thought, oh man, you know, I did make the right choice. So yeah, I think there have been various moments throughout this very long journey where I felt that elation and conviction that I did do the right thing. But I think ultimately March 29th will be the day where I really feel it, where it really hits home, because then I can say, I'm a published author, and I can point to that book and I can hold it in my hand and I can say, I did this. And I'm looking forward to that moment.
Oh, I think we're all looking forward to that moment for you. I think that's fantastic. What can you give just a little blurb about what this book is about? I don't think we've talked about that.
Okay. So the book is called Where the Seams Meet, and it's a multi-generational story of fathers and sons that in lives that are intertwined with baseball. I grew up a huge baseball fan, and something in my life gave me the initial idea for this book. But really, when I set out, I wanted to write a heartwarming story that's also gritty at times, about fathers and sons. And, you know, baseball is the backdrop, but ultimately, the book is about relationships. And it's about ups and downs. It's about love and loss and the transformative power of acceptance. You know, that's the kind of book that I wanted to write. And, you know, looking back now, I think I met that objective.
Oh, that's great. I know that and probably for our generation too, I've never been a really big baseball fan, but Field of Dreams was like just a very impactful story to me when I was young. And so I'm looking forward to reading your book.
You know, it's cool that you mentioned that because I remember the first time I saw Field of Dreams. And, you know, there's this moment at the end where you as a viewer understand it wasn't about Shoeless Joe. Right? If you build it, he will come. It wasn't about Shoeless Joe. It was about Ray's dad, you know? And they're standing there on the field as the other players are disappearing into the corn. And he turns to the catcher, the young man who is his father. He says, hey, dad, want to have a catch? So I'm sitting there on the couch as a kid. I think I was, I don't know, maybe 9 watching this. And I look over to my dad and he's tearing up. And that wasn't something I saw as a kid, but it hit home. It touched him. And it touched me, and I never forgot that feeling. So when it came to writing my own book, that was always the model that I looked towards. You know, I wanted to recapture some of the magic from Field of Dreams and create something like that in my own story. And yeah, that's what I did. And I'm really excited to share it with people.
Wow. That's great. I'm excited.
Fantastic.
Awesome. Okay. So we're getting close to wrapping it up here. I'd like to ask you a question I ask every single guest. If there are one or two things that you want service members to remember as they're preparing for their own transition, what are they?
Do I have to limit it to one or two? Can I do a few more? If I'm quick?
Why not? Bring it all.
Okay. All right. So I think the first thing that you need to do is look to your peers, right? You said people between 7 and 22 years, that's a big difference. It's a wide audience. But I think initially you should start by looking at some of your peers who have made the transition successfully. And don't just look at it, talk to them. Figure out what they did. How were they successful? How did they start? Where did they get to where they are now? For me, that was part of my process. Once I was done with the writing part and I really had to get down to the brass tacks of finding out what came next, I looked to a lot of my peers, I talked to a lot of them, and they gave me a lot of great advice. The next thing that I would say, be humble, be curious, right? Even if you are the smartest guy or gal in the room, you're walking into a world that you know little about. Be humble, be ready to learn. And how do you achieve that learning? By being curious. A friend and mentor of mine told me years ago that oftentimes the difference between a good officer and a great officer is curiosity. Be curious, ask questions, learn new things. So I would recommend doing that. That should be your posture going in. I would say third, don't be afraid to pivot. You might think that you have it all worked out and you very well could, but sometimes things happen along the way. Sometimes you have to get a taste for what you don't want before you really understand what you do want. And if that changes your plan, then pivot. Make a new plan, come up with something new, because ultimately you should be happy in what you're doing. And I would say the last thing here is don't let fear get in the way. If you have a dream and you are really committed to achieving it, don't let fear be what stops you. Be willing to take a risk. For me, it was a huge risk to start something new, learn the skill of writing fiction and write a novel. But I knew that if I could do it, the end state, the outcome, was worth that risk. So I didn't let fear stop me, even though there were a lot of times where I really doubted myself. So if you really want something and you want it bad, go out and get it.
You probably see me looking down. I'm writing all these down. That's great. And I've already got number one taken care of because I'm talking to you. So this is awesome. No, I appreciate it. So I know I've asked a lot of questions. We just don't ask enough questions. But I'd like to know where can our listeners find you and ask questions if they want to kind of pursue the same path you are? And then also, how can we find your book? How can we get a copy of that?
Okay. So first of all, I am 100% willing to talk to anybody about the transition process. Like I said, I had a lot of people mentor me along the way. So my goal now is to pay that back. So if you want to talk professionally, find me on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find, Patrick Holcomb. Connect with me. We can set up a time to have a conversation. If you want to learn more about the book, I do have a website, authorpatrickholcomb.com. You can find me on Instagram as well, Forever Giants 2014. I am a Giants fan. There is a lot of Giants content in that book, including the 2014 World Series. So you can find me there. As far as the book itself, it'll be released on March 29th, and Amazon is a super easy way to find it, Barnes & Noble as well. I'm doing my first event at Warwick's Bookstore in La Jolla. If you're here in San Diego, please drop by. I'm also doing one in Santa Rosa, California. So Warwick's will be on the 2nd of April and in Santa Rosa at Copperfields on April 12th.
All right.
Good on you.
Outstanding. All right. It is exciting. We're going to have links to your Instagram and your LinkedIn. And then we'll go back and it'll be in the episode notes, and then we'll go back and we'll make sure that we get a link to Amazon so that if anybody's listening to this, they can also get a copy of your book. You know, support a veteran and listen to another heartwarming story of baseball. And I'm looking forward to getting my hands on a copy myself. So it's going to be
fantastic.
Well, Pat, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was great. We're able to talk about two different career paths simultaneously in one episode, and it's been unique. And thank you so much for coming on and spending the time to share that information with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a wonderful opportunity, and I think there's so much value in what you guys are doing. So thank you for making this information available to people who need it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll be in touch.
Sounds good.
And Patrick Holcomb has left the virtual studio. Sis, thoughts?
Yeah, he said something that actually really resonated with me, is that he had a very hard time marketing himself. I have a very hard time marketing myself too. But I think it's interesting because maybe people that are in the military can understand what it is to create your own mission statement and vision statement. Mm. And I think if you write those things down, just like companies do, a mission and a vision, like what do you stand for now and what do you see for the future for yourself? And if you put that down, that'll help foster more imagination of what you could do based on the skills that you have, and then help you market yourself to people and possible opportunities.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I need to do it. I've got it. I mean, I've done it. When I was working with Amy Lee Miller, and she was helping me through creating a personal mission statement, I had it written down. But the one thing that I don't have is I don't have a vision board. Mm. And so I ended up getting a board on Amazon, and I just need to hang it up on my wall, because part of what I want to do is I want to have that vision and that mission actually written down so that I can look at it. And that way I'm always kind of asking myself, is what I'm doing today contributing or detracting from that mission and that vision of my future? Mm-hmm. Because I think it's so easy to get distracted, whether it's parenting, whether it's, you know, the vacation, or whether it's all the little pet projects that we want to get done, but don't necessarily contribute. They might be life enriching, mm-hmm. but I think the doing exactly what you said is also, and having it present and visual, is a very beneficial thing. So thank you for mentioning that. I liked how he was very concise in his 4 points at the very end, what he recommends to transitioning service members, and talk about a man that's not afraid to pivot. I mean, what a huge pivot. What a huge
everywhere.
Pivot.
Even starting as a kid with moving to all these different places and being extremely resilient in these changes and these pivots that either were created for him, not by his own design, or by his design. I think it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Did you get chills when we were talking about Field of Dreams? Because I know I did.
I mean, I was literally watching the movie in my head as we were talking.
That's right.
Such a good movie.
Yeah. And I think I'm interested to see what, if he used part of that as his inspiration, and I'm sure he used other things. It'll be really, I think it's going to be a great read. I'm looking forward to reading his book.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think I'll probably connect with it. And I think listeners, if we're kind of in the same age bracket, I think all of us are going to get something out of it. So definitely help a vet out, check it out on Amazon, click on the link, and get a good read. Add some candy reading to your list, because that's exactly what I'm going to do. Well, that's it. That's a wrap. If you like what you heard, and you're listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and you haven't already done so, please consider giving us a 5-star review. It helps us beat the data analytics and share this information with other transitioning service members. And also, this is another video podcast. You could look at this video if you're on this, watching it on YouTube. Give us a thumbs up. It helps. Also, hit us up with comments. You can do it on Spotify. You can also do it on YouTube. Let us know what you liked about it. Maybe if we missed something, I like that feedback, because we incorporate it in the dialogue that we have with future guests. So definitely appreciate it. If you don't give us feedback on those platforms, you can always email us at newmissionct@gmail.com. That's newmissioncharlietango@gmail.com. And we'll get back to you as soon as we can. And if you're preparing for your own transition, well, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.